Hey everybody, welcome to Kings and Priests. I'm Michael, and me and my co-host Dean Sweetman are here every week talking faith-driven business and entrepreneurship. And I'm excited because we're going to start dropping weekly interviews and conversations as well with entrepreneurs, founders, creators, and investors, all people building innovative and interesting projects and companies with a vision to ultimately advance the kingdom of God here on earth. This week, I talk with Regan Rose, the founder of Redeeming Productivity, which is a Christian approach to getting stuff done. Redeeming Productivity is a blog, newsletter, courses, and podcast where Regan talks about technology, techniques, and theology in the light of the Bible to help Christians get more done and glorify God in how they do it. I personally love Regan's content and definitely encourage you to sign up for his newsletter at redeemingproductivity.com. In this conversation, I talk with Regan about the theology of productivity, motives behind success, and then we hear his story of leaving his job to build Redeeming Productivity full-time. Before we get to the interview, I want to remind you to do us a massive favor and like, rate, leave us a review on whichever platform you are listening to this on today. We are still in the earliest stages of building this podcast and community, and this really does go such a long way in helping us spread the word. Okay, let's get to this conversation with Regan Rose of Redeeming Productivity. Welcome to the Kings and Priests podcast. I'm here with Regan Rose. What's
hey,
up, Regan?
It's good to be here.
Thanks for being on. I'm glad we've had this plan for like maybe a month now, so I'm really excited to finally get to
do this. Yeah, I've been looking forward to it, Mike.
So Regan is the founder of Redeeming Productivity. And he's got a newsletter, podcast, courses. You have a book here coming out soon that I heard about, or just give us like the brief, classic, couple minute long overview of like what you're about, what you do, just to give people some context.
No, totally. Yeah. So I got really into like productivity literature, reading all the books, you know, Seven Habits for Highly Effective People, Getting Things Done. Mm-hmm. I got into a lot of that when I was in college and especially in seminary. And just the whole idea of time management. And so I've always been passionate about that. But because I got really deep down that rabbit hole, I started seeing like some patterns emerge with the worldview and kind of the philosophy behind some of the secular time management stuff. And so like tactically, it was really helpful. But then it would always get into stuff that I felt like was... I don't know, at odds with like kind of a biblical worldview. And so that's kind of where the name came from, Redeeming Productivity, is I'm trying to sort of take a really solid theology of work, of stewardship, of time, and what Christians are all about, and merge that with really, really good, some of the best tactical stuff out there. How do you actually do it? You know, how do you actually set up a morning routine? How do you actually manage your tasks? And so you're not just doing stuff the right way, but you're doing it with the right mindset and you're doing it for the right reason, which is to bring God glory with your life. So I started writing on this in like 2016, and it slowly has evolved into, it spun off into a podcast. And then I started doing some YouTube stuff. And then last year, I went full time with it and started releasing some products and courses that kind of show people step by step how to do some of these things. And that's enabled me to go full time with it. And it's just been a wild ride. And the Lord's really been good to us.
That's so cool. So you jumped out on your own about a year ago, and I want to talk more about that later, but you got a wife, kids. I mean, like when you say I'm fully supporting myself doing this, it's you're supporting a family, not just you.
Yeah, I got a wife and two kids, and it's huge. By God's grace, my wife doesn't need to work right now because this is doing what we need it to do. I mean, I'm literally in my in-laws' basement right now. So we're looking for a house, but we're actually able to look for a house right now, which has been a big turning point.
That's awesome. Well, I want to get into some of this theology of productivity. And then I really want to jump into, you know, a lot of our listeners are founders. They're, you know, they have a side hustle that they're wanting to go full time on. They're faith-based entrepreneurs. They want to be faith-based entrepreneurs. So I want to get into your story of what that's been like for you, and then even start to talk really practically about how you were able to do that. But first, you tweeted something a few days ago that kind of like stopped me. I read it, I reread it, and it sort of like actually really convicted me. It was a quote from C.S. Lewis. It says this: "No man who values originality will ever be original. But to try to tell the truth as you see it, try to do any bit of work as well as it can be done for the work's sake, and what men call originality will come unsought." As like a classic contrarian, want everything I do to be the most original and roll my eyes at everything that seems to not be original. That not only convicted me, but it really kind of like reset my framing in just like even what I'm attempting to do. So I don't know, man, like, where did that quote come from for you, just to be like, I want to put this out into the world? And I don't know, maybe talk to me about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're doing any kind of content creation, be it writing or podcasting or even producing a sermon or something like that, like, you're all like, just like you were talking about, you're always wrestling with that question of originality. Like, obviously you don't want to just go around copying people. And so I don't know about you, but like, I get frozen sometimes in like that quest to do something. I want to say something no one else has said before. But yeah. One of the things I started thinking about years ago, and I think this quote sort of came from that I've been dwelling on this for a couple of years, is like, as Christians, we don't have that much original to say, you know, even what you're creating is not, you're remolding what God has done. And, you know, we have the Bible, we have the Word of God. And I come from a background of preaching and teaching and going through seminary. And the idea of what does it mean to teach God's word? Like, you don't really want to be original. Like, you don't want to be saying things the Bible doesn't right. say. And so I've just thought, I've generalized
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you don't want to say something that's like never been said yes. before. You know what I mean? When you start getting into that territory, it's like, dangerous. Whoa. And I come from like a charismatic Pentecostal yeah. background. So there's a lot of times we're, you know, wait a minute, I don't know if that's ever been said right. before. And I don't know if that's so.
Yeah,
okay,
is that a good
thing?
Yeah. No, so like I that idea of originality, the thing that eventually struck me is, man, it's not about saying something that's never been said before. It's about saying something that in a way that only you could say it. And I think this gets to the heart of like how God has made us. Like he created us in unique ways, that the way that you express or say something or create something is going to be totally different than anybody else. Like, that's not just like a rah-rah pat you on the back. Like, it's just true. Like, it's God has made us to be creative beings because we're made in his image and he is a creator. So what is originality then? It's saying something in a way that only you could say it and doing it well. And so that C.S. Lewis quote, I don't remember where I came across it, but I was like, yes, this nails it. Because if you just do something with integrity, you do it with quality, and you just try as much as you can to be the real deal, it will come out original. Even if you're taking your inspiration from somebody else, even if you're looking at something someone else is doing and you're saying, I like that, but how could I say that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's really good. There's this quote, and I don't remember where I heard it, but it's, you know, it must have been in some like preaching class somewhere along the way, but it was like, you know, you got to be an echo before you can be a voice, right? So in other words, like, not that you're straight up copying somebody or just like ripping off something, but, you know, it's 100% originality is like, never needs to be the goal. You know what I mean? Especially if you're like learning your craft and figuring it all out and all that kind of stuff.
And so, you often find your voice by mimicking, you know, you start by copying.
Exactly.
And then eventually, you know, your personality comes through.
Yep. My mom actually just recently, during COVID, like went and digitized all of our old, like, you know, video camcorder tapes from, you know, when I was a kid. And the tail end of those were like me speaking as like a junior high youth guy in our church. And so she's like sending me clips from these messages, and I'm like, I don't know who I was trying to be there, but
you could tell
I'm glad these aren't on YouTube, and I am sorry for anyone that had to sit through these, because this is shocking.
Yeah, totally.
But it's interesting that you said that about getting kind of freezing, getting frozen, like trying to create something, whether that's create content, build a company, write a sermon, anything it might be. Like, it really is easy to, especially in today where it's like you go on social media and all you see is everything that everybody else is doing. And so it's sort of like, man, it can be really overwhelming. And I too have found myself just like frozen some days where I'm like, wait a minute. Well, I haven't actually then done anything or put anything out into the world. And
no,
so,
totally.
I don't know. That was just a great, and I can imagine for you, like jumping into this full time, that's got to be a daily struggle, right?
Totally. Like, it's really scary. It's fun. I try to, I haven't come up with a good way to express it, but it's, there's something interesting that happens when you take total responsibility for your life. Like that, whether you go, you become an entrepreneur or you just kind of decide I'm going to get in shape now. Like something very interesting happens when you sort of stop treating yourself like, sometimes it can be a victim. Sometimes it's just be that you're deferring to other people to make decisions for you. But it's like this mixture of fear, because it's like you're uncertain. How do you do it? Because you're not letting someone else tell you everything to do. You've decided to do it yourself.
Right.
And just like incredibly exciting. Like I wake up every day just so excited. It's so fun to kind of go out there and try to make something, even though I'm like fumbling and stumbling and it's often like terrifying. You're like, okay, I don't know how we're going to make ends meet this month, that kind of stuff. I wouldn't choose anything else. It's just, it's like you feel so much more alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I feel like for me, it's like week by week, where some weeks I wake up and I'm like, what have I gotten myself into? Why am I doing this? What makes me think I have any business trying to do this? And then some weeks I wake up like, all right, here we go. I'm walking right in the middle of God's plan for my life. I'm confident, borderline cocky about what God's called me to do. And it's just like roller coaster.
You can almost feel bipolar. For me, it's the weekends, man.
Exactly.
Like Saturday afternoon when I deliberately chose when I started, I'm not going to work on the weekends. I have really little kids. I want to be around them while they're small.
Yep.
But the weekends I have like a little mini like existential crisis every Saturday, because I'm not, I think what it is I'm not working. And since I know that it all sort of depends on me, I know that's not true theologically, but you feel, you know, the burden of responsibility is on me. I like freak out, because at least on Monday I'm doing something, so I can feel like I'm making progress, even though I'm not there yet. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, 100%. I've had to relearn that too. We have a 8-month-old at home, and I definitely noticed like during the weeks I'm not feeling anxious, because I'm producing, even if it's just like thinking about the business. But yeah, that's like Saturday, wake up, nothing to do except like hang with the family. That's the thing that the anxiety kind of starts to rise, because I'm like, wait a minute, I should be doing, and then I make the mistake of going on Twitter and seeing some, you know, tweet thread about productivity and like what successful people do on the weekends versus what non-successful people do on the weekends. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I want to get to some of that in a minute, but first what I want to do is, so we've got all kinds of people listening, again, entrepreneurs, business people, pastors, church leaders, people who, you know, work in the marketplace, but also are very involved in sort of like serving at their church and building church. Talk to me about, and there's a lot of people that talk about productivity, right? From, like you said, a non-Christian perspective. I think a lot of the productivity talk around this in the church has always been just like, go build, take ground, grow, make it happen, growth at all costs. And I know there's been a lot of talk about that in the Christian world over the last few years. But what's your like theology around productivity? Yeah. Like, obviously God's put us on this earth to build and to produce. I know you have really put a lot of thought into this space. So I don't know, man, just riff for a bit on kind of like where you started and where you're at now.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think that, you know, philosophically, so many different pieces of the foundation of how we think about productivity biblically is different from how someone who isn't basing that philosophy on the Bible would think. Like, even in terms of success, right? Like, how do you define success? A lot of books on productivity won't even get into this. They just kind of assume from the start, like, you want to get rich, right? You know? So like, even in how we define success, it's okay to make money. I'm not saying it's wrong, but ultimate success for a Christian is going to be, were we faithful to God? Like, it's judged on an eternal timeline. It's judged on were we faithful stewards of this life? Did we try to glorify him in everything we did? Even if the business flops, even if everything you're doing falls apart, were you trying to be faithful? And I feel like that's like a massive difference for us, and that has trickled down to everything we do. Like integrity, for example. I work with integrity because that, if I don't work with integrity, I may succeed, I may lie, or I may cut corners, and I may succeed temporally, but ultimately mm-hmm. I failed. And so like when you understand mm-hmm. that your definition of success is, you know, when Christ says, well done, good and faithful servant, then it changes everything about how you work, your motivation for it. And yeah, it just trickles down to every aspect of life. So I think that's mm-hmm. one of the massive things that has influenced my thinking a lot. The other one is purpose. I think sometimes we forget that we have like the answers to like the biggest problems in the universe, which is a pretty weird thing. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing benefit of being a Christian. We have clarity about things that the rest of the world is searching for clarity on. I know why I'm here. I know that mm-hmm. the purpose of my life is to honor God. That like narrows down so much, because it's so hard living mm-hmm. in this age of infinite options and opportunities. It's hard to know what to do, but mm-hmm. it starts to give you this laser focus when you realize, no. Whatever I do, it's got to be about bringing God glory. And that gives me information about how I do it, that I'm, like I said, you're going to do it with integrity. I'm going to do it well, with excellence, mm-hmm. and why mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. So I think those are just a couple of the philosophical things that really do change at a very fundamental level how we approach life and work.
Right. So, you know, you mentioned sort of like, you know, we talk about, and on this podcast a lot, we talk about things like failure mm-hmm. and just, again, that theology of like wanting to build mm-hmm. something. We even talk a lot about sort of like wealth and wealth mm-hmm. creation and is it okay to want that? And what are the motives underneath totally. That, right? Like nobody goes into business or nobody starts anything with the idea of like, I don't really want this to be successful. Right. You know what I mean? And I often find this like, so like we talk productivity and then with productivity is ambition, yes. right? Nobody wants to be really productive without having some sort of ambition for what that productivity is going to lead to,
right?
So how have you, and again, you know, you write content on this, you've taught courses, you've had a lot of conversations in this space. So how do you sort of like navigate that of going, okay, I wake up every day and I want to do what I do for the glory of God. I also have an expectation that I'm going to succeed right. in whatever I've determined that success looks like, right? Productivity is not just for productivity's mm-hmm. sake, or maybe it is. How have you balanced that of like waking up going, okay, I have ambition, I have desire. And even if that ambition is to just multiply what God has given me, how do you sort of keep that in balance? You know,
no, that's, does that make sense? Totally. That's a great question. Yeah. I think there's sort of like two aspects to what you're asking. The one is like the money thing. I don't know that anyone would go into business for themselves if that wasn't on the table, because like, why would you give up mm-hmm. the security or the comfort, you know, of having an employer mm-hmm. unless you thought that by doing this myself, I'll be able to at least meet that or hopefully exceed it. So mm-hmm. that is a very real question. And the danger there is like scripture does warn about like those the love of money being the root of all kinds of evil, mm-hmm. that those who mm-hmm. desire riches can fall into a snare. You know, Mark yeah. 4, it talks about the deceitfulness of riches. And the Bible never says money is bad. Mm-hmm. But if you inordinately desire it, you got a problem, you know? And
right.
that's really the issue, is who's on the throne. You know, Jesus even said you can't mm-hmm. serve God and money. You got to pick one.
And money.
So mm-hmm. that is a fight. I mean, that's a fight for me too. Even you can love money and you can have love of money. I mean, even when you're not making it, a lot of times we think that it's the guy who's really successful. Oh, he must love money. You know, he's driving around a Lambo or something. But a mm-hmm. lot of times, at least for me, the struggle with love of money is when I don't have it, because I keep trusting in it. I keep thinking if I have a little more, then I'll be safe, then I'll be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And what it revealed really is that I'm trusting money more than God. And the really mm-hmm. interesting thing, Mike, that I've come to realize lately is it's not that I wasn't idolizing money before. It's that I didn't realize it. When I worked for other people and I was comfortable financially, I wasn't aware of the fact that I was trusting in the money for my safety and security. You know what I'm saying? I was mm-hmm. idolizing it. Mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. loving money.
Yep.
But it was when I was put in a position where it depended on me that I realized that was a problem. And you know, actually went to war against that. So I think that's one aspect of it is the money side. Like, and that all I can say to that is it's just a battle every day. You just have to keep saying, Lord, right. help me to do this for your sake, not for the money, but please bless this endeavor. Because, you know, even temporal finances are in different points in the scripture are viewed as a blessing. Like Solomon was blessed financially. There's different things like that. I'm not getting into like the prosperity stuff, but I just think we'd be blind if we didn't admit that temporal often, not every time, it's not a law. Often God does bless people temporally, financially for being faithful to him. So that's one aspect. The other side is the ambition and just that desiring to do more, which I always thought is like a really funny thing that Christians almost balk at the idea of ambition. So it's kind of weird. Like it's like it's almost more spiritual just not to care, not to want anything. Let me share a quote with you.
As if
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go for it. No, I was just going to say, as if, like you said earlier, we don't have the answers to the biggest mysteries of the universe. Like as if we don't have something to say, a perspective to bring in any situation we find ourselves in, right? So that alone should be enough for us, at least I think, to go, man, I want to, for lack of a better term, I have an ambition to succeed in whatever it is that I'm doing for the glory of God.
Yeah, there's nothing spiritual or noble about floating through life. Like you're here for a reason. Like if you believe that, then you got to take responsibility and you got to say, okay, what is that reason? How's God specially equipped me? And two, what can I do to set a vision for my life and to actually go after that with all that I have? Like, I honestly don't get it. Like the people that are just Christians that are just floating through life and just kind of like, oh, I hate my job. I don't like any of this stuff, but you know what? I'm like, what are you waiting for? Are you just waiting to die? Like what's the point? Right. You know?
Right. Yeah, no, that's so true. That's so true.
Let me share a quick quote with you. I just thought was so good about ambition. This is from J. Oswald Sanders from his book, Spiritual Leadership. He says, desiring to excel is not a sin. It is motivation that determines ambition's character. Our Lord never taught against the urge to high achievement. He did expose and condemn unworthy motivation. All Christians are called to develop God-given talents, to make the most of their lives, and to develop to the fullest their God-given gifts and capabilities. I just love that, especially that part, it's motivation that determines ambition's character. If you're going after this exclusively so that you can, you know, get wealthy so you can spend it on yourself and on your own desires, like that's a failed enterprise. But if you're going after this so that you can ultimately bring God more glory, and even in as the Lord enriches you financially, you're using that to help build his kingdom as well. Well, there you go. That's a noble ambition. It's not that ambition is bad. It's that it's got to be motivated for the right thing.
Right. And only God really knows our motivation, right? I was actually talking to a friend this morning about just kind of this idea of like church growth. And we just like randomly got up like, why do some churches grow and others don't? Right. Or why do some businesses succeed and others don't? And again, some of those are just product market fit, great idea, great product that people need. But oftentimes I do think a lot about like, okay, so if God knows the innermost motives of our heart, ultimately he kind of knows why we're trying to do what we're trying to do, right? And that's a journey in his grace he's willing to go on with us. But at the same time, we're lying to ourselves if we think that like, that nobody sees the motives that are really underneath what it is that we're trying to do. I really like that. That kind of approach to success.
Yeah, sometimes we don't know our whole motives. Like that's something I feel like I've tried to wrestle with and reconcile is I don't think I'm ever doing stuff from totally pure motives. You know, like I'm always having to sort of like come before the Lord and say, okay, can you help mortify in me like the parts of my desire here that are purely selfish or sinful. And the more you do that, I think the better you get at it. But your motivations, it's always going to be a battle. Like we're not glorified yet. We still have indwelling sin. We're still going to be drawn by bad motivation. So it's just, it's being, I guess, humble enough and maybe self-aware enough to admit that and just constantly be trying to ask for the Lord's help with that.
Talk about your, you've written a lot about morning routine, mm-hmm. and just even hearing you, even like talking about this idea of like success and ambition and motivation, for a Christian, you know, you read stuff about like morning routines of, you know, high capacity elite producers and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, like I wake up at 5 a.m. and I jump in an ice bath and then I, you know, whatever, like all this stuff. And that's all fine. I'm totally like, I don't do any of that, but I'm all about it, you know? But maybe sort of this like idea of like a morning routine, I would imagine that a lot of your teaching around that has to do with like spiritual disciplines mm-hmm. to essentially every day kind of like reset those motivations, take stock of them. So I don't know, maybe just riff on like some of that thought that you've had around morning routine and for students and dads and moms and entrepreneurs and pastors, like what are some of the things that you teach in that and how has that kind of transformed your life?
Yeah, totally. No, I'm huge on the morning routine things. It's just, it's like a secret weapon. I feel like a lot of what I teach on it does center around, it's kind of a mixture. I have some spiritual disciplines that, you know, making time for Bible study and prayer every day also, but other practical things, exercise, planning your day, looking ahead at what's coming up. I think the big thing that got me into it was the first part was the spiritual disciplines. Like you're talking to most Christians and like, they know I should be in the Word every day. I should be praying, but, and you'll get that at church and stuff, but nobody sits down and says, here's how you do that. Here's exactly how you mm-hmm. make a time for yourself. Here's how long you could spend. Mm-hmm. Here's a plan. Here's how to do it. And so that's what I kind of aimed to do. I was like, could I just like dumb this down so that I could just hand somebody here you go. Here's how you do it. But mm-hmm. one of the great things about doing that stuff in the morning, I realized, is one, mornings are undistracted. If you wake up a little bit earlier, nobody's calling you, hopefully, and mm-hmm. there's nothing can interrupt you. And so you kind of own that time mm-hmm. in a really unique way. Mm-hmm. And two is once you start building a morning habit of like doing anything, and like say you start with Bible reading and prayer, suddenly it becomes really easy to start stacking other stuff on the back of that. So when I started getting into this about 10 years ago, doing a morning routine, it kept getting longer because I loved it. I cherished the time and I kept realizing, oh, wait, mm-hmm. I could not just read my Bible and pray. I could do exercise at this time. And then after that, I could journal. And after that, I could read in some of my books. And after that, I could plan my day. And so I wake up like stupidly early because I go to bed at like the same time probably your grandparents do.
What time do you wake up?
I wake up at 4:30 right now, but I go to bed, man. I go to sleep at 9. So I live the lifestyle of the geriatric.
Dude, that's awesome. How long did it take you? Well, I guess you said you've been doing it 10 years. I've always desired to be that morning mm-hmm. person. And I get up between 6:30 and 7. We have a new baby, yeah. So it's like,
yeah, that throws everything's
thrown into a tailspin. But was that difficult for you to like work up to that point?
It actually happened by accident. So I was like a sworn member of the Night Owl Society. Like I really was really big on, no, my most creative time is like between 10:30 and like 2 in the morning. Like I loved being up late. And what I realized later was that's probably because it was undistracted. Like that was probably a big reason that I liked working during those times mm-hmm. is I could just get in the flow state and just go for hours. But when mm-hmm. I got married, my wife and I just decided, you know, we're always going to go to sleep together at the same time. And we just decided, mm-hmm. I don't remember why, we just decided to do that. And my mm-hmm. wife needs like 9 to 10 hours of sleep a night. And I only need about 7, 7.5. And so mm-hmm. when we started going to bed at the same time, we were going to bed early so she could get enough sleep. And I was just waking up really early, like, because it was just too long.
You'd slept enough. Yeah,
because like 9:30 to 4:30 is 7 hours of sleep. So I started to wake mm-hmm, up at 4:30, 5 in the morning. And I didn't know what to do. Like, I was like, okay, I guess I'll watch TV. And it took me a while to dawn on me. I was like, no, this is a huge gift. So that was huge for me, just going to bed earlier. And that's what I tell people. They say, well, how do I make room for this? How do I make sure I'm getting enough sleep? Like, it's really as simple as going to bed earlier. Like, if you're, and I realize not mm-hmm. everyone can do that, and I'm not recommending everybody get up at 4:30, but even if you carve out like an extra half, if you go to bed a half an hour earlier and then set your alarm a half an hour earlier, like 30 minutes mm-hmm. is a lot of time in the morning to do things when mm-hmm. you're undistracted.
Yeah, no, that's so true. Let's I want to get into just kind of your journey, starting doing what you're doing now. I know you just celebrated kind of a year of building this full time, so making your living doing this. I was actually listening to kind of your first year, I guess, sort of like wrap up celebration episode on the way into work this morning, and you had this quote that I just thought, like, again, hit me like right for exactly the way I was thinking this week. You said, building something by yourself is like playing an entirely different version of the game of life. So, I mean, like, that was so resonate, like, just that is exactly what it feels like. So I don't know, man, I guess talk about like your journey up to getting to the point where you're doing this by yourself. You're sort of like a, I guess you call yourself like a solopreneur is the term. You're like a media entity unto yourself. I don't know, like, talk about that. Was that something you always wanted to do? And like, why did you choose this alternative game of life as opposed to the one that most people go after?
No, totally. Yeah, I don't know. I think part of me probably was always a little interested in this. I honestly was never interested in entrepreneurship. Like, some of my friends were always starting businesses and stuff like that. And like, for some reason that never resonated with me. But, when I was just writing in my free time and doing blogging and all that, like, it was always kind of in the back of my mind, like, wouldn't it be cool to do this and have it be your own thing? And kind of like anybody, I mean, anyone who's in entrepreneurship, it's like, wouldn't it be fun to be your own boss? So I kind of stumbled into it over a long period of time, and after doing it just as a hobby, didn't really make it, I mean, I wasn't really trying to make money off of it for the first, I don't know, 4 years of it. I had moved, let's see, I was in California. I was out near you, actually, for about 7 years. I went out there to go to school for seminary. Cool. And then I was working there, and we just decided during COVID, actually, my wife and I were like, why all our family's in Michigan? And we're like, why are we so far away from our family? Like, what are we doing? I think a lot of people felt that way.
A lot of people, yeah.
And so we just really started honestly thinking about, like, what if we move back? So I ended up taking a different job initially back here in Michigan, where we're living now, where we both grew up and both of our families are. And I just, even doing that job, I started to really feel, I had a lot of responsibility on me in that job. A lot of it was very self-directed. And I just started to think, like, I could do this. Like, I could do this myself. Like, this is like seeing someone else who had done it and built something and working with them. I was like, I think I could do this. And so I don't know. I just got the bug. I don't know what else to call it. The entrepreneur bug. Yep. And I was like, I'm going to try it. And thankfully, I mean, we were just in such a great position because the Lord was just so gracious to us with the timing of it. We had sold a house in California and we had moved back to Michigan. We hadn't bought a house yet. And so we had, some money in the bank from selling that house. And so we're like, you know what, if I don't try it now, we'll probably never be in such a favorable position again. And so that was kind of the nail in the coffin. We were actually in the middle of closing. We were about to close on a house. Our offer had been accepted.
Oh, wow.
And we ended up pulling out of it and walking away.
In California?
No, in Michigan.
Oh, yeah. In Michigan. Right.
And so we were like, well, all of our money was going to go to the down payment. So all of that stuff kind of all came together at the same time. And we just, there was the pressure of the house was closing, and like, I don't know, it was the push. It was the push we needed. My wife was totally on board. She was very encouraging that we should try it. And so that was really pushed us over the edge and to, okay, let's take some of this money, have a little runway, and let's just try it. And so the last year was mostly just throwing stuff at the wall. At first, I didn't know what I was. You know, I was like, okay, am I a podcaster? Am I a blogger? Am I a YouTuber? What am I, an influencer? Do you know what I mean?
You are a creator. Exactly. Right.
And like, I didn't have language for it. You know, like, I know there's a lot of talk about the creator economy, all that stuff. I didn't keep up with any of that. I didn't understand. I'd never heard the term solopreneur even. So it took a while to figure out, no, I'm a teacher. I'm educating people. Yeah. And that's where I kind of made the shift into doing. I did my first online course was actually called Power Mornings, and it's on how to create a Christ-honoring morning routine. So I just literally went through. I was like, what? This is kind of the cornerstone to my productive lifestyle. Let me just break it down and explain it to people. And so that was the start to it, where it got becoming financially stable.
I love that idea of like, am I, you know, you take sort of like a podcaster, creator, whatever. And none of those are bad, mm-hmm. right? But I think that distilling it down to I'm a teacher, mm-hmm. that is like a, like what am I, that's a switch from like, what am I trying to create for myself to what am I doing to like serve and yes. help and build other people, right? Like I'm putting something into the world of value, mm-hmm. right? I imagine that was like a really powerful shift.
No, totally. Totally. And yeah. it's funny too, I guess maybe this touches on some of the struggles that Christians in particular have with business or trying to become an entrepreneur, the money stuff is like that mm-hmm. whole like concept of value, of producing something of value and giving it to people and in exchange, asking them to give you monetary value for it. Like, I just mm-hmm. think there's, mm-hmm. this could probably be a whole, I'm going off on a tangent here, but this could probably be a whole different thing. I just think that's such a wonderful concept. Like I worked for a ministry for a number of years where we gave away everything for free, which is wonderful. That's wonderful, right? But mm-hmm. I you know, could see how often people were using the stuff, how they were interacting with it. People don't value free things. And I know that's like an aphorism. Everybody says that, but it's so true. So there's a yep. really powerful symbiosis that happens when you produce something that really is valuable, really is helpful, and mm-hmm. you ask people mm-hmm. to put some skin in the game to get it, and then yep. it brings value to their life, and them actually putting skin in the game made them actually take advantage of the thing rather than right. throwing stuff out into the world and hoping people actually utilize it. I don't know if that's kind of out there, yeah. but that's something that that really helped me reconcile the whole thing about, but shouldn't I be doing everything for free? And you know,
right. Right. No, that's honestly such a good perspective, because there is that thought of like, you know, what like I'm creating something. God's given me a voice. He's given me a perspective. But I think there is something to, you know, hey, I'm going to create something of value. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like someone is willing to pay for what the value mm-hmm. is. And I think that that's like a really, really important thing, because I do think that God wants us to be fruitful,
right?
You know, and again, it's like you're not trying to figure out the way to maximize every ounce of profit right. through what it is that you're doing, but people are willing to create. Like, I mean, I think I spent like $700 on a course mm-hmm. last year, that and it was super helpful, but I took it way more seriously yes. than I did, you know, just like some free thing that was, you know, whatever. It was like someone who had created immense value, had given me enough value just by me interacting with the stuff that they had been talking about for free online, that made me just go, oh, I kind of want to get under the hood a little totally. Bit and kind of learn some of the ins and outs. And I didn't think twice about spending the money because of the value that it was gonna Absolutely. Create. So, or the value that had been created. So, okay, talk to me about, we just actually have an episode. So this will probably be coming out after the episode, but Dean and I, who's my co-host on this, talked about risk, and how an entrepreneur, a faith-based entrepreneur, manages risk, looks at risk. There's this difference between taking a, what we would call like a faith step and understanding risk, right? You talked in your episode that I listened to this morning about, you said, you know, I think, man, if I do the wrong thing, I can kill this whole thing I've poured my life into. Yeah. So there is this inherent risk in jumping out, starting a business, starting to create, doing something on your own. How have you thought about that? Mm-hmm. And how do you manage that idea of like faith and risk versus responsibility and stewardship?
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great question. I'll just kind of like go off the cuff here. I think a big part of it just comes down to wisdom, like recognizing how little is really in your control and sort of accepting the things that are within your control and trying to manage those and steward those wisely. So there's always risk no matter what you do. Even if you're employed by somebody else, there's always risk. You get financial downturn, you get laid off, you get fired, company goes under due to no fault of your own. There's always risk. And the question is the risk so disproportionate to the upside that it's not worth doing, right? Like that's, you know, with investing or whether you're starting a company, you got to make those decisions.
Yep.
And so I think there is like due diligence is involved. If you're just starting out, you gotta know, like, if there is product market fit, you gotta know, have some sense of like, do people want what I'm going to do? Or is this, it's not as, you know, YOLO is not a step of faith. That's just doing something crazy.
Wait, exactly. As I check my brokerage account right now, and I'm kidding.
Just put it all in Dogecoin.
Exactly. So, side note, one of my friends, speaking of the Dogecoin thing, and I think I bought like Dogecoin, and I think I maybe held it over one night, and you know, like a very little bit. I had a buddy who bought $300 of Dogecoin and rode it all the way up to, and I think when he finally sold it, it was like almost $18,000 worth of Dogecoin.
Amazing.
And I was like, dude, you have to sell this right now. Yeah. You will never make an investment this good the rest of your life. I don't have the risk tolerance to play in the Dogecoin world.
Well, you know what's funny too, is like with risk in general, I'm not like big into finance stuff, but I follow some people that talk about that stuff a lot. Because I find like the whole concept of risk, I think, is very interesting. Mm-hmm. How do you mitigate it? But one of the things you'll hear from guys like really like long-term good investors is they'll talk about that you can't evaluate the quality of a decision based on the outcome. Like that applies in the investing world. And also I think it mm-hmm. applies universally in life is, mm-hmm. and I think there's mm-hmm. has a special application for Christians. Like, so with the investing analogy, you could do all the right things. Say you were picking a company that you were going to invest in and everything looks mm-hmm. good on paper. But then COVID happens or something crazy, right? You couldn't
exactly.
have predicted that.
Right.
And so you mm-hmm. can't say, oh, that was dumb. It wasn't dumb. It was a
right.
good decision.
Right.
Things outside of your control
right.
changed it. And so I think for mm-hmm. Christians too, those things that doing due diligence on what you're working on, making sure you're doing it with integrity, like I think it is even more applicable for us that mm-hmm. we need just to mm-hmm. be as wise as we can with the with mm-hmm. the information we can have with making decisions. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, mm-hmm. we can leave the rest up to God. We can trust
right.
ourselves to God. And we can, one of the most productive things you can do is pray over a decision and ask mm-hmm. for wisdom. It says in James that whoever asks mm-hmm. for wisdom will get it.
Right.
And just entrust your plans to the Lord. So I mm-hmm. think that's the two things is trying to have wisdom for the parts of risk that you have some control over, and then mm-hmm. the rest of it, you just have to hand it over to God.
Mm-hmm. I want to get into a second, just some of the nuts and bolts of your business and how what that's been like. Talk to me about, you know, as we talk about risk, there's that inherent failure mm-hmm. of trying to start something also,
yeah.
right? So what if I start this and it doesn't work? What if I, you know, try this and I need to go get a job again in 8 months or whatever? We talk a lot about on this podcast about kind of how failure is looked at in Christian circles, and not necessarily just moral failure, mm-hmm. but this sort of performative culture sometimes that we find in the faith space and the church and all that kind of stuff. And we always often compare that to Silicon Valley, where failing is like a badge of honor.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Right? So as long as you fail with integrity mm-hmm. and as long as you handle yourself properly, that person that invested is like, they'll let you have another go of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like they'll write another check for the next idea because you've sort of like been in the arena, you've played the game, which sounds really noble. Mm-hmm. But so we often talk about like, what are we actually like, what can we actually possibly fail at? Is it ego? Is it like, you know, for example, it's not like you're putting your life savings on the line
yeah.
to step out and have started this business. At the end of the day, failure looks like having to go, maybe I couldn't make this
yeah.
work the way that I thought I could. How do you deal with that, like fear of failure?
Totally.
And like waking up every day going, man, I'm trying something, I'm putting myself out there and it could maybe not work.
Yeah, no, I you know, it's funny that you're talking about the ego part. Like I've realized in myself that my fear of failure is most tied to embarrassment and like fear of man, mm-hmm. really. What are people gonna think about me if I fail? Because mm-hmm. the thing is like, this was relatively low risk for us financially speaking. Like we had kind of some stops in place. We said if we spend this much money, then we're calling it. We set that mm-hmm. up ahead of time
mm-hmm.
and said if it hits
yep.
that number, we're done. We're pulling out.
Yep. So how have you balanced yeah. like the deep work of I'm creating, I'm writing, I'm thinking. And how do you balance that with the like working on the business, like figuring out growth, thinking through strategies, trying out new tools, like all that kind of stuff. How do you balance the two of those?
Yeah. You know, it's funny when I was, getting into this, like I mentioned before, I was doing this all in my spare time, podcasts, blogging, even YouTube. And I kind of like, I realized now how naive it was, but I thought once I went full time, like the content machine is just going to ramp up. Like imagine how much I can do, because I hadn't accounted for how much is involved on the administrative, building the business, that kind of stuff like you're talking about. And so it's been funny. My content production has barely increased from when I was doing this just as a side thing in my free time. Almost all of my additional time goes to the back end, a lot of building stuff. I expect that that'll start to slow down now that things are sort of humming and I have a little machine going. But that really surprised me. So I reserve mornings for creative work. So that's sort of, that really works for me. I love mornings. That's when my brain is at tip top shape. And so I usually am writing or recording or editing in the morning before lunch. And then after lunch is almost always just, okay, I'm answering all the emails, I'm dealing with billing issues and, you know, all that stuff. So that model's worked really well for me to keep the content machine running, but also being building and maintaining the back end.
Yeah. What kind of tools do you use? Like, let's get super practical. I think you use ConvertKit, which I do not use, but I'm kind of trying to figure out what to do on the newsletter side of things right now. What products are you using? What's your, for lack of a better term, like tech stack look like?
Yeah, ConvertKit's for email. Love that. I use MailChimp for a while, which is fine. But ConvertKit, it's so good. You can tag people in so many different ways. Really love that. Integrates with everything. Websites built on WordPress. I'm doing course creation and delivering that via Teachable. And I have a membership community that's on the Circle platform. So instead of doing that on Facebook or Discord, I use Circle, which I really like. On like the actual content creation, I use Final Cut for video editing. But I use this tool called Descript for podcasting. Have you heard of that?
Talk about a life changer.
Dude, that's absolutely just game changer. Like if anybody listened to this, if you're doing content creation or a podcasting or even video stuff and you want to create derivative content, getting a workflow going into Script, basically what it is, it allows you to edit audio or video via the transcript. So it transcribes everything automatically. And then you can delete parts and it will cut the video or cut the audio there. And then you can highlight sections and export them as like audiograms or video. That is like the linchpin for me and has been for a while with trying to take long form content and
chop it up.
Getting quotes of myself, all that.
Yeah. Descript is amazing. And they just keep coming out with new updates. And it's like, even for like, I was talking to somebody the other day that wants to write more. And just like kind of the idea of like, you know, when I'm driving in the car, I'm thinking, and I'm like, man, you literally could be driving in the car, talk into the notes section of your phone, throw it into Descript when you get home, it will transcribe it for you and you can go edit and boom, there you go. Like it really is a game changing product, Descript is.
Yeah. No, I do that too all the time. I'll just open it up and I'll hit record and I'll just talk through an idea. And often that becomes an article. I don't do anything. I just throw the audio away afterwards. Yeah. But it's cool. You can do screen recordings on it. Yeah. It's nuts. It's everyone should have Descript.
Okay. So before we close, let's just do like someone's listening today. They are trying to decide, hey, I want to turn this side hustle into a full-time gig, or I've got this kind of like dream in my heart to do something that I want to launch. Oftentimes they think that 0-1 has to look like I'm quitting my job today and I'm doing this full time. You started doing this as a side hustle years ago, right? And that's one thing that we always try and talk to entrepreneurs about is like, hey, there are baby steps that you can take along the way. There's crawl, walk, and run. So like, I don't know, maybe just talk to someone for a second that's like, man, I'm listening to this. I want to start, whether it's a podcast or a blog or whether it's a business or whatever that is. What's like the most important first step that they can take to start doing that?
No, I think that's huge. Yeah, I mean, definitely the first thing is starting to pray about it and getting wise counsel. Like if you're starting to think that direction, talk to people who know you well and whose opinion you trust. If you're close with your pastor, that's so so helpful to have people who are kind of affirming that, because that'll help you if you do jump in and things get rough. You have that encouragement that, you know what, other people saw this, that this would be something to be worth me doing. The thing is just, you know, they talk about like validating an idea. It's completely free to get on social media and then just start talking about something, whether it's, whether you're even going to do content creation or it's just a business, just start trying to see what are other people saying, throw stuff out there. And going through that process is super helpful because it creates, I didn't realize this was what was happening over the years I was doing it, but it created a feedback loop. Because people would write to me about my articles, or I'd have conversations about them, and I started to notice themes. Okay, this there's a specific thing that keeps coming up, and so I'd write to that, and I'd kind of, you're kind of narrowing this funnel down and focusing in and finding, okay, there's a people keep asking the same question, people have the same problem again and again and again. I can address that. One thing I wish I did that I didn't do, but I tell people now is, you can go from that stage, sort of like validating in public, to in most, whether you're doing a product, a service, or even content creation, there's usually some realm where you could do consulting or coaching type stuff. And I read this great book recently called The Minimalist Entrepreneur.
Yeah, you read that? I have it. I haven't started it yet. It's on the stack on my bookshelf.
It's worth reading. And I said, anybody listening, that's a great book to worth reading, because he basically gives you a game plan for going from validating an idea like
that's
that.
That's the guy that started Gumroad. Is that right? He started Gumroad?
Yep, exactly.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, he's like the creator economy guy. But he recommends you validate the idea, and then you start helping people one-on-one, like do stuff that doesn't scale, like I think like Paul Graham says. And you just start helping people. And by doing that, you create an even tighter feedback loop, because you find out what are the things people are willing to pay for. And it has the bonus of, you can make money on the side doing this thing before you dump all this time or all this money into building something. You know that there are people that want it. I wish I had done that, because it's, I kind of worked backwards and ended up doing some coaching and consulting stuff now. And I'm learning, I have so much more clarity about the main thing that I'm doing. Now that, because I'm talking to individuals one-on-one. So those are the two things, or three things: pray about it, get sound counsel, validate your idea in public, and then start trying to help people solve a problem one-on-one, and just take copious notes.
Yeah, that's amazing. Reagan, thanks, man, for taking the time to do this. This has been so great, so helpful. We'll definitely have to do it again. Where can people find you online? Like, just, you know, where do we go? How can we find you, your courses, your newsletter, all that stuff?
Yeah, everything's on redeemingproductivity.com. You can go on there, you can read articles, find the podcast, all that stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. Reagan, thanks for the time, man. It was so great talking to you.
Thank you, Mike. This has been a ton of fun.